The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So sometimes when we come to learn about the teachings, come here and listen to Dharma talks, after a while we start to get a sense that there's a lot to learn. All these lists, the three kinds of craving, the three springs of papancha, the three springs of mental proliferation, the three roots of unwholesome action, the four kinds of clinging, the four noble truths, the four foundations of mindfulness, the five faculties, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, the five powers, the six sense bases, the seven factors of awakening, the eightfold path, the ten paramis, the ten fetters, the 12 steps of dependent origination. And then there's the teachings on karma, on not self. So it seems like there's a lot to take in. And not only that, there's all these different practices as well. The practice is taught in the four foundations of mindfulness alone. There's, I think, 16 practices in that one discourse. So there's a lot in there. And I just like to explore a little bit. You know, we are a culture of knowledge, and we often think that knowledge is where it's at, that we need to, from our cultural perspective, we need to take in all of this information, that's the most important piece, is taking in the information. And by this information, then somehow we'll learn something. But in the practice that we're doing here, the information is, it's a part. It's definitely a part of what we need to engage with this practice. But it's, I just want to explore a little bit about how much we really need to know of all of this information to actually begin to engage, to begin to have a transformation happen around this practice. The main tool that the Buddha suggests for transformation is the tool of awareness, of mindfulness, of wise attention. And that term, wise attention, I like that term, wise attention, because it joins this factor of bringing attention, being aware of our experience, with some sense of what it's helpful to pay attention to. So there does need to be some kind of wisdom, some kind of understanding that's present in our exploration of our experience when we turn our attention to our experience with mindfulness. Mindfulness being that factor, that quality of mind, that quality of being able to meet experience, of being aware of what's happening in the present moment as it's happening. Kind of a capacity of our minds to reflect experience, that we can be aware that we are aware. This is one of the components of mindfulness, and it's actually a key component of our practice, to be aware that we are aware. You know, if we were to tell somebody on the street, this is, I think, where the component of wise attention comes in. If we were to tell somebody on the street, be aware of what you're experiencing. Be aware of your anger. Are you aware that you're angry? You know, if you come up to somebody who's angry and ask them, are you aware that you're angry? Likely they'll say, yeah, I know I'm angry. You know, it's no mystery to me that I'm angry. But that, just that awareness isn't quite enough to transform that anger through understanding. So we need a little bit of wisdom. And what I'd like to suggest here, so there needs to be some kind of wisdom, and I listed a whole slew of things that the Buddha teaches at the beginning. What I'd like to suggest is that to begin this practice and to engage, we actually can kind of hone it down to some simpler pieces and use those pieces as our framework. And they're really the core piece of reorientation that the Buddha asked us to look at was around the way we suffer. If you're suffering, he said, he didn't say just be aware of suffering. He said understand it. So this is a key piece. This is a key piece of information that's really helpful for us in beginning to explore our experience. When we're experiencing some kind of struggle, dissatisfaction, unhappiness, some kind of tightening or tension or grasping, a fear, an anxiety, a worry, when we're experiencing anything like that, rather than just being aware of it, actually turn to it. Typically when we're aware of our difficulties, our struggles, our suffering, we're kind of aware of how we are in relation to the world. It's kind of like that thing out there, that's what's making me suffer. That's what I got to do something about. I got to fix that thing, change that thing, keep that thing, get rid of that other thing. That's what will make me happy. So our orientation towards happiness is kind of around arranging the world. And what the Buddha suggests instead is to turn towards the feeling of the struggle itself, and that will be a key for us. So just that one piece of information actually can go a long way. I think of the wisdom of the Buddha as being very dense. Now that one little bit of information, turn to explore your what it feels like to be angry or depressed or lonely or frustrated. What is that experience? What is the felt sense of that experience? Rather than trying to manipulate or change things so that it will go away. So a little bit of this wisdom actually goes a long way. My own experience of this, you know, I first met the Dharma when I was in the South Pacific. I was in the Peace Corps. And I met the Dharma through suffering. Quite a bit of anger at a particular person over a situation. Deep anger. The person wasn't there, the person was 7,000 miles away, but didn't matter. There was rage at this person whenever he appeared in my mind. And so there was a lot of suffering. After some point it was really clear to me that this anger, I could see that I had this assumption that the anger would somehow, you know, do something to that person. You know, it would somehow travel the 7,000 miles across the ocean and do something to that person. But that quickly became obvious that that was delusion. It wasn't going to touch the person. So I began to see that the anger was burning me up. So I was experiencing the suffering of that. And this is actually a place where our practice can begin, is by acknowledging that we are suffering. And this is what I did. I acknowledged that, and it's like, what can I do with this? How can I meet this? The Buddha said, you know, if when you're suffering, you meet a teaching that shows you a potentially a way out. Faith can arise that we can have a sense that there's a possibility of something different happening here. And at this time, when this event happened, I was in communication with a friend back here in California, and she said, well, can I send you a book? So she sent me a book about meditation. Not so much about meditation, but more about mindfulness, being aware in everyday life. And I read this book, and I read it probably three times. And there I was in the middle of the South Pacific, didn't have any meditation teachers, didn't have much to go on, but I had this book. And, you know, having read through that book, I think the biggest thing I got out of this book was one little piece of wisdom. That little piece of wisdom was, rather than acting on your emotions, turn to observe them. Notice what's happening for you when they're happening. It's like, I didn't understand a lot of the rest of what was in the book, but that little piece is kind of like, okay, I see what she's saying there, but I don't get how that's supposed to do anything, but I haven't got anything better to try, so maybe I'll give this a try. So I took this one little bit of wisdom. I didn't actually know much about mindfulness. I hadn't had a 6 weeks introductory course on being mindful. All I had was this book. But you know, the instruction was along the lines of just notice what you can notice about your anger or your whatever it is. For me, it was anger. And so with this book, having grasped that little tiny bit of wisdom out of that book and just the littlest bit of information about what mindfulness even meant, I started trying to be aware when I got angry. Just notice what it felt like when I got angry. And initially this was, I mean, the very first time, I remember so clearly, the very first time I noticed this, my mind said something like, oh yeah, I said I was going to be aware of this, I have no idea what that means, and oh, this is really unpleasant. Boy, this hurts. This does not feel good. What do I do with this? I basically didn't have a clue what it really meant. I didn't have the tools of turn to observe it in your body. What are the thoughts? I didn't have any of the basic mindfulness instructions. But I could tell I was angry. So it was a simple recognition. Angry. Yes, angry. That's what's happening right now. After a few minutes of that, it's like, well, I don't know what I do with this. I guess I go back to work. And in retrospect, actually, that was a breakthrough. Because I had been kind of frozen in rage when I remembered about this, that I was going to be aware of the anger. So that mindfulness, that even just a simple recognition, angry, gave me enough space to break through that rage, to just be able to kind of let it go a little bit and go back to work, put my mind on something else and let go of the anger. So I kept working with this over the course of several months. And over the course of several months, I began to definitely experience a change in my relationship to the anger. In fact, what I noticed was that the mindfulness was remembering to become aware of the anger earlier in the process. So it wasn't quite so difficult the next time, each time. It got easier to be aware that this anger was coming up. So the process of just as simple, this little bit of wisdom, a little tiny bit of wisdom, along with that willingness to turn and be mindful, this is wise attention. This is the practice of wise attention. It gave me a lot of space around that anger. It was incredibly helpful for allowing me to stop being so ruled by that mind state. So this was all in my daily life. You know, my initial exploration around mindfulness and this wisdom of the Buddha happened in daily life. I wasn't particularly interested in meditating, so I just was exploring this in my daily life. So sometimes when we think of wisdom, when we think of what it means, we think of like big, grand things. It's like wisdom. I need wisdom to open my heart. Or the word wisdom sounds so lofty somehow. But the wisdom of the Buddha, the kind of the core wisdom of the Buddha, is really simple and really powerful. This wisdom of understanding suffering, changing our relationship to suffering, so that we're not continually trying to act, to fix, to change, to get rid of, to hold on to. And the other piece that it kind of boils down to is recognizing how cause and effect work in our experience. So understanding suffering and seeing how the ways we engage, that there's always a cause and effect relationship in how our minds work. When our minds are propelled out of states of mind like anger, we suffer. It's kind of a simple recognition of cause and effect. The things that create that anger, in that exploration, when I was exploring that anger in my early days of practice, I clearly saw that the anger came when I started thinking about this person. You know, it's like I could be going along quite fine, and then a thought would pop into my mind, and the anger would explode. So cause and effect. We begin to see how the cause and effect relationship works. So how does it work in our practice that, you know, this little bit of wisdom, just working with even just this little bit of wisdom, how does it work that this helps us? I mean, the promise of the practice is that we become more and more free from the way that we suffer, the way that we struggle, the way that we get irritated, annoyed, depressed, angry. The way we hold on to things, the way we're afraid, the way we worry, the way we're anxious. The promise of this practice is that we can become free of those difficulties. So how does it work? Why would understanding suffering and looking at cause and effect have a transformative effect on our minds? The way I understand this, and what I've seen in my own practice, is that, you know, basically, I think the reason this works is because we're built, our kind of our psyche, our biology is built to move towards happiness. We'd like to be happy. I mean, we don't want to be unhappy. We don't want to be in pain. We don't want to struggle. We don't want to suffer. And so our whole system kind of tries to orient us towards happiness, but without clearly seeing how unhappiness is caused, we do things that take us straight down the road to being unhappy. So what happens for us, I mean, our normal orientation is getting what I want, that's what'll make me happy. Getting rid of what I don't want, that's what'll make me happy. I mean, we try to, we kind of have a close-in view of what will make us happy. It's like the nearest thing, you know, oh, if I can get that thing, that'll make me happy. Or get rid of that thing, that'll make me happy. It's like we don't have a very broad view of what happiness is. It's just like, this is as good as it gets. If I can just arrange the world for this 10 seconds to be happy, that's as good as it gets. So what happens to us as we start to turn towards our experience, what happens to us as we turn towards this feeling of struggle, we start to experience in a very direct way. Okay, so suppose it's frustration that's coming up, frustration about not having something we want. Normal orientation would be get the thing, try to find a way to get the thing that we want. Turning instead towards the frustration, we see that the frustration itself is unpleasant. The frustration itself feels tight, tense, contracted. And we also begin to see through the witnessing of that frustration. At some point, if we're willing to just sit with it, we'll see that it doesn't last, that frustration goes away. Whether it's because our minds kind of just get reoriented to something else, that particular frustration goes away. Maybe we turn to something else. It's kind of like our mind can't hang out with something for that long. It's like, oh, kind of loses interest in the topic and moves on to something else. So that frustration goes away, and we see that when that frustration goes away, there's no longer a problem about that thing. It's in the very frustration that the unhappiness is. So as we turn to notice our experience, turn to look at our struggles, our suffering, we start to see much more clearly that the suffering, the difficulty that we're experiencing is actually within our own minds. That frustration is a good example of that. If, just as a thought experiment, if you think about something you want and that you can't have, just something that you're frustrated about, if that frustration were to disappear, whether or not you get the thing, if the frustration were gone, would it be a problem? If you didn't have the sense of wanting it to be other than it is, would it be a problem? So this is a huge mental shift. And as we turn our attention to our experience, we see, we begin to directly experience the truth of this. And so we see that the way towards happiness actually lies in the letting go of wanting things to be other than they are. Now, this is a slow process. It's a kind of a staged process. It's not something that happens like you see something once and suddenly never again you want anything. It's kind of a gradual, slow wearing away. So as the mind starts to see that this whole pattern of wanting things is not a very reliable or helpful way towards truly being happy, the mind starts to reorient. The mind-body system wants to be happy. So when it understands through this observation of suffering, when the mind begins to understand through this observation of suffering that a lot of the kind of hooks and struggles are right in the mind itself, the mind begins to let go of those hooks. So it's the same kind of biological process that's at work here. It's just the mind understands a little more clearly what would make us happy. In this early time of my practice, I'm going to tell this story I've told so many times, but it so clearly demonstrates this way of our mind just seeing where happiness doesn't lie. This whole process of observing the anger over and over again, you know, months I spent watching this anger in those early days of my practice. And then one day, you know, I was just in my kitchen and I was cutting an apple and not particularly, you know, I was just present. I wasn't even trying to be aware, but just, you know, just in my kitchen cutting my apple. And in the moment of cutting the apple, I saw the thought of the person that I was angry with appear in my mind. And I saw the mind kind of, this was a witnessing. This wasn't a doing. This was just watching how the mind was doing its thing. So I saw the mind kind of, it was like a freight train of wanting to get on that thought and think more thoughts in order to get angry at that person. Having spent months paying attention to anger, and this is really where I think the learning comes in. I had spent months paying attention to anger. How does anger feel? Boy, this is really unpleasant. This hurts. This hurts. The mind and body knew viscerally anger hurts. That is suffering. Before that, there had been this orientation out, you know, anger hurts him, and hadn't really acknowledged the suffering in here. So viscerally, the body and mind knew anger hurts. And when the mind saw this thought and this like freight train of like, oh yeah, I want to jump on that thought, think more thoughts to get angry, the mind also knew, oh, you know, that's going to hurt. And it just let it go. The mind just let it go, kind of like it might let go, your body might let go of a pot that you touch on a hot stove. It's like that way lies suffering. So, you know, this I think expresses or demonstrates the way this practice unfolds. We meet our suffering. We feel our suffering. We acknowledge it. We know it as suffering. And then the mind slowly over time starts to let go of that because it sees its own contribution to the process. So the practice can be pretty simple, actually. We can use this wise attention, awareness, recognizing that we're aware, and being aware of whether the mind is contributing to our suffering. I like this this kind of basic guideline. Let suffering be your guide in your practice. When there's suffering, there's something to understand. Not to orient towards there's suffering, how do I get rid of it? There's suffering. What is it that needs to be understood? There's lots of different layers of the way that we struggle, that we suffer. Initially, you know, we have these major kinds of patterns and habits that we're hooked into. We've all got your own favorites. Mine were anger, self-hatred, some depression. Others may be, you know, pride or boredom, worry, anxiety, fear, judgment. Whatever it is, those layers, those are the kind of obvious layers, just to meet. Can you have the courage to meet them? Understand them through this direct experiencing. Understand that they are suffering. Rather than orienting to them as, this is something that has to be changed. Now, I do have to say here, because often this is, there's kind of a, hearing this teaching, there's often a sense that we're just supposed to sit back and watch things and never take action. And that's not actually what the teaching is. The encouragement is to notice where action comes out of. If action is being motivated by greed, by aversion, or by delusion, maybe it's not so helpful to follow through on that action. But if action is motivated by compassion, kindness, wisdom, generosity, follow through on those actions. And use suffering as your guide. Again, using suffering as the guide, we can begin to see. You know, we have a sense of what appropriate is for us in this moment. If there's a sense of, in getting ready to take an action, of tightness, of contraction, of fear, of anxiety or worry, look at that. Turn to look at that. Allow that suffering to be a guide for you. If in taking an action it feels like open, connected, spacious, that can be a guide. So as our practice unfolds, we see that some of the obvious ways that we suffer perhaps aren't catching us quite so much. In my own experience with that anger, I saw that it wasn't quite so sticky anymore. You know, that it was coming up, but I wasn't getting stuck to it and looping in the mind and getting spun into a rage the way I used to. I could catch, oh yeah, the mind's kind of heading in that direction. Don't need to go there. So it wasn't as sticky anymore. So as some of these larger kinds of patterns fall away, the larger kinds of suffering, we then begin to see subtler kinds of suffering. The suffering of wanting to be a good meditator, wanting to have states of calm, the suffering of trying to arrange our meditative life the way we'd like it to be. You know, our life in the world gets pretty balanced, more open, and then we start to suffer around other cravings, other kinds of identities. The identity of being a good practitioner, of having good practice, being seen in a certain way. And so at that point, we can start looking at those kinds of suffering. It's like, look at what is the obvious suffering in your experience? That is what needs attending to. Early in my practice, I kind of formed this identity as a meditator. And it served me, you know, for quite a while. I think it still serves me. It helped me to get through these more difficult patterns of the stuck quality around the anger and the self-hatred. And then when those had largely, when the stickiness of those had really, really reduced, I really then began seeing the pain of the identification of being a meditator, of being a good meditator. And the failure, the feeling of failure that came when I felt like I wasn't a good meditator. Now this pattern was very similar to the patterns that had created the larger kinds of suffering. The wanting to be right, the wanting to be good. A lot of the larger kinds of suffering had very similar patterns. We bring our patterns into our practice in a way. So this now becomes what, you know, what the obvious suffering is. That's where we turn our attention. We can find our way through our own minds, we have our own maze of stuff, our own suffering tangle. Each of us has our own tangle. And we can find our way through by just meeting what is obvious about this moment. And is there suffering or is there relaxation? Is there ease? It can be really simple. So letting suffering be your guide in this turning towards experience. Trusting the unfolding, trusting the unfolding of your own journey. The transformation happens in small moments. Much of our transformation, I think, happens in little bits. Sometimes there can be kind of big, mind-blowing insights that seem to transform us. But in my own experience, you know, there's been a handful of those in my practice. The vast majority of the transformation in my own practice has come really, really gradually through just this willingness to meet these patterns of suffering over and over and over and over again. It's like each time I met that pattern of anger. And it continued, certainly, even after that time of seeing the mind heading towards anger and the mind letting it go. That was a mind-blowing insight for me. That was like, oh my God, the mind can actually see it's going somewhere and not go there? That's amazing. I certainly didn't have that kind of awareness for the rest of the time. After that moment, but it gave me the sense of confidence in the practice to keep going, that this is worth doing. For the next few years, I continued to just meet that pattern over and over again. Whenever a thought of this person came up and the anger came up, oh, there's the anger. Just notice it. What can I notice? Put it aside if it's too much. Over and over again, each time we meet a pattern. It's like a little bit more information, a little bit more gets understood about that pattern each time we meet it. It may not even be something you consciously understand. I've had whole patterns of suffering fall away through just this gradual meeting of experience, gradually, over and over again, just, oh, there it is, there it is, there it is. So a continuity is important. Simplicity of just being willing to meet experience, turn towards it, rather than trying to fix, alter, do something about it. And just keep trying. I think that's enough for right now. Is there any comments or thoughts?
So thank you.
It is on.
Okay. Thank you. It's so nice to have you back. Can you just once again go over this idea of these larger patterns of suffering being a way into the more subtle and deeper layers of suffering that we might not be aware of and how to work with that? It's a beautiful practice?
Let's see. You know, I think it really unfolds by just the kind of the willingness to meet patterns over and over and over again. We start to see that, you know, even just a small irritation. Here's an example. For example, when I first had my first three month retreat, the transition out of that retreat was a pretty major upheaval for me. And I noticed about 2 weeks before the end of the retreat, it's like the transition began, and it was so uncomfortable, really unpleasant. It's like, get me out of here. I just want this transition to be over and done with. Clear that I don't like transitions, that it's kind of like just want to jump over it to get to the next thing. So, in noticing, just beginning to see how much struggle there was around major transitions. Beginning to look at areas in my life where there's small transitions, little tiny transitions. Getting out of the shower, finishing a shower, finish the shower. There's just this little bit of impatience to be done with this to get to the next thing. So, just through seeing, in the large, we can see the obvious suffering. And then if we can begin to understand the pattern around that, it was clear for me that there was a pattern around transitions. So then starting to look in subtler, smaller transitions, I began to see that very same pattern in such a small way that it almost wasn't seen. I mean, it could easily be jumped over because it was just a small bit of, just a little bit of rushing through, or just a little mind tumbling forward a little bit. So that, so seeing the patterns in the large, we can start to check in. If there's something, you might see something that would allow you to begin to notice anger, aversion, just the way, again, the familiarity with the way it feels. This is another way I think it's unfolded for me. I've not tried to explain this before, so this is kind of just coming out as it comes out. In getting familiar with the way a pattern feels, just that kind of building of aversion or anger. Initially we've leapt into it completely, and it's a big suffering. It's like, oh, I hate this thing, and it feels awful in the whole mind and body system. But over time, as we start to get familiar with that pattern, we catch it earlier, and we start to feel it kind of just beginning to form. So we get familiar with just what it feels like for that pattern to just begin to arise. And then we can start to, because we're more familiar with a kind of a shift from easefulness to what does it feel like to not have that easefulness, we can begin to notice when we move there. So, for me, a big pattern is around aversion. And, I can just see the mind just in little going there, like today, driving here. Somebody cut me off, in the car. And then, I followed behind them for quite a ways, and then they did something else that was annoying. and I saw myself as I came up, I ended up ahead of them at some point, and I saw myself look back in the mirror, and I could just see the mind wanting to look back into the mirror to, just send a little vibe that direction. And it's like, okay, there it is. There's that pattern. Just the feel, and just like, just don't look. just take your eyes out of the rearview mirror. Just don't go there. You know, so we can start to feel how it feels to not be in that. As we begin to see it coming, we start to see the transition from easeful to non-easeful, and we feel it. We feel it coming. We feel it arising. So does that help? Yeah.
Nice to see you, Andrea.
Thank you.
How about in the case of aversion to routine, for example? And then because that's there, then sometimes because of that same aversion, you create a lot of almost inconveniences for yourself in order to break out a routine, or you.
So is this an unnecessary routine? I mean, is this...
Well, just routine in general. Sometimes what you were saying about getting out of the shower and this and that and transitions, I've noticed that about myself too, but also just noticing how much routine sometimes bothers me, but there are routines that need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a routine that you... But then it's like, okay, this again, and this again, and this again.
So that's a great.
I'm just gonna go do this.
That's a great place to notice how the suffering of that routine is completely created by the reaction to it. Because it is just something that has to happen. You know, it's just like, yeah, got to do this, and so it's kind of like the wish that I didn't have to do this. It's just that wish, and that is the suffering of it, right there. That's the routine isn't the suffering. It's your relationship to it that's the suffering. So can you turn towards that very sense of boredom, perhaps, or you know, just kind of this again? I spent impatience, perhaps.
You can even turn to desperation. It's so
turn,
deep sometimes.
Turn towards that feeling. You know, turn towards that. Get really familiar with it. You know, I began to see how a pattern of impatience was so prevalent for me. You know, so like, okay, I'm going to start to explore that. If you see a particular pattern is one that operates for you a lot, it can be interesting to pick that, to kind of make almost a project around that in your daily life. Say, I just want to, if we go about our daily life practice by saying, I'm going to be mindful all day long, we're likely to fail. But if you pick something, one or two things, to kind of orient your mindfulness around, you can begin to see, you can begin to make some inroads, essentially, into mindfulness in those areas. So, you know, you could pick this pattern of desperation, of impatience around routine as something to be interested in. What happens? What's the feeling? Get familiar with it. When does it come up? Can you feel it when it comes up? What is it that triggers it coming up? You know, maybe it comes up again, like me, kind of at the very end of something. Get on to the next thing. Or maybe it comes up as you begin it. Just get interested for yourself in how does this feeling come up? It's probably not there the entire time you're engaged in the routine. It probably comes at some point. What is it that's making it come into being?
Well, I think it's I know it has to do with fear of and
of kind of having a lot to do.
You know, kind of like, well, no, kind of like, oh, what's the meaning, you know, of life?
I see. Is this it? Yeah.
We repeat every day in and out. It's kind of like that existential.
That is indeed the Buddhist term for that is. There's the three kinds of suffering that the Buddha talked about. There's the suffering of unpleasant experience, which is kind of obvious suffering. Dukkha is the word for suffering, and that one, the suffering of unpleasant experience, is called dukkha-dukkha. Then there's the suffering that's inherent kind of in pleasant experience, which is the suffering that it's not directly in the pleasant, but it's in the fact that that pleasantness is going to change. And so there's a fear of when is it going to change? When am I going to lose this? How can I keep it for longer? So there's all that kind of struggle around the pleasant experience. You know, it may be perfectly fine while it's there, but then when it goes, we go into the doldrums. Then there's this third kind, which is it's called sankhara dukkha. It's essentially what you're talking about. It's the dukkha of being, of the fact that we have to get up, get dressed, go to work, make money so that we can buy food, so that we can feed ourselves and our families, so that we can get up the next day and go to work. it's just the kind of that cycle. And we do that. We do that, do that, do that, until we die, you know? It's like, what is the point? So just noticing that very pattern. It's interesting, you know, that just noticing that very sense around what is the point. That question itself is the suffering. Keep exploring. I mean, I think one thing that we find too as we engage in our practice is we start to actually be here for our lives. You know, we're living our lives without really being here for them a lot of the time. You know, we're living in our thoughts. We're living in our, and that's a lot of what's happening, is that you're living in, and this is the next thing I have to do, and there's the next thing and the next thing. And what is the point of doing all of those things? You're not really connecting with what is actually happening here and now. And that seems to be the medicine for that question.
Thank you.
So we need to stop. So thank you all for your attention.